And Jackie, if I am, what I'm going to do is be recording from one tape that's not very high quality but gets stuck to another shorter tape that's not very high quality but doesn't get stuck, I hope. And it's a very precious record, and I'll try and send you both. If I'm recording, what you're going to get is some more of my memories from tapes, which are pretty funny, and there may be some lapses, but keep listening, because in one of them, Mommy tells the story of Mr. Pripps. This is during our dinner conversation. So hopefully this is recording, and then I'll add a Howard Milner story if there's room. I'm talking on August 4th, 1980. I gotta figure. All right, here we go, and here's the play.
Four, side one. A farm, and now we're up to college memories, having to do with Beloit and the Round Barn. The date of this dictation is January 21, first day of spring, 1979. And I'm starting on 1949 in the winter. January 3rd, kind of interesting because I drove up to Madison.
Well, we'll try that again. It seemed to work all right. And this is again college stuff.
Reminiscence. This would be the tape four, side one. A farm, and now we're up to college memories, having to do with Beloit and the Round Barn. Date of this dictation is January 21, first day of spring, 1979. And I'm starting in 1949 in the winter. January 3rd, kind of interesting because I drove up to Madison. Mary Bort, we visited Joe and Carl. We ate at the Tenderloin Inn, then back to Joe's. I took color movies of my nephew, Carl Peter Schmidt. I presented these movies to Joe, and it ends up with a picture of his diapers being changed and saying the end. On that day also, I'd gone to Hazel's early and took pictures of her mantel place and of Aunt Lillian and the dog. Isn't that interesting? And talked to an old lady who, from the Beta House, was there. Dad had a discussion group, or was in a discussion group, and my note in the diary, January 21, 49, said, studied all evening on Greek and biology. Dad's discussion group, who modestly called themselves the Great Brains Club, met here with Bennington, King, and all the college professors. And I went to play rehearsal. I hadn't learned how to study for college very well. And that first semester, Jackie, I would have been lost without your help. Because I think King or somebody told you I wasn't doing so well. My note on the 26th says, today I studied 4 hours in the morning and then with a trembling chin walked into Morris Ingersoll, History 101 exam. If it hadn't been for Jackie and the help she gave me, I'd have flunked it cold. As it is, I think I got an A on the exam. On the 27th, Bob Jackson and I went and saw a movie on insane people, Snake Pit. That's kind of prophetic, isn't it? I was in a college play, The Barretts of Wimpole Street. The first night, I forgot to take my horn-rimmed glasses off. I was a captain or something or other. Nobody appeared to notice. And on the next to last night, when Mr. Barrett walked in, I jerked to attention and the pins holding my pants up broke. They sagged. I was quite relieved when I got off the stage. On January 31st, farm lectures at Madison. After having to get up to get Mrs. Bjork, I slept till noon and then got rudely jerked out and went to Madison with Dad. We went to T16 on campus and heard 5 lectures on weed control, bugs, bug control, etc. It was rather cold, but it was very interesting. John Sapp, Ken, Gramp, Dad, and I went. This time I was dating Sally Richardson, Ann Soper, Mary Bort, Ann Bowles. Imagine that. Ann Bowles' brother was the fellow in Tucson who got killed by the mafia. At any rate, I was initiated into Sigma Chi. And after the great ceremony, secret ceremony, I have this in my diary. Roy Chapman Anders, an Alpha Zeta of Sigma Chi, was kicked out of Boyd College when he was caught grave robbing, so the story goes. And guess what the Sigs have in their family closet? A few days later, I've been talking about Sigma Chi all this time, and I've got a little note at the bottom. Said, Dad suggests I get my fly zipper monogrammed with the Sigma Chi. On Thursday, April 14th, on my diary, there is printed Maundy Thursday, Lincoln's assassination, and Passover. I have brackets around it, in which I printed Triple Treat. This was a great evening, Jackie, and I'll just read it verbatim. About 6:30 they arrived, the Cronises, Benningtons, Kings, Fredericks, Rocky and Abby Prentice, Motters and Walsh's. Jackie and Bob and I helped serve. Mrs. B and another lady had worked on it all day. Fish soup, fish, ham, asparagus, wine, sweet little rolls, peas and pineapple, rum pudding. We three managed to stuff ourselves between shifts. Prentice and I discussed my Model T Ford and the telephone in his car. Soon Daddy announced, quotes, the game, unquote, a glorified charades. With all the professors, it was fun. Acting, terrific. Book titles and silly phrases, all the way from the shortened chatissus, I don't know what that is, to kiss me again and again. I had aquamarine harmonizes with certain Chinese jade. Acted for water, king, Latin, aqua, etc. Bennington had Lysenko is so strictly stinko. And he got it. Fine evening. Bob and I took the truck down and the cows were out, we found. Now, Jack, you asked when I was in Wisconsin what we did about the cows, and I don't remember too much about our various jobs. We just rounded them up. So I chased them in the snowstorm. At 2, I took the milk truck to church and took a load of little monsters to the dairy for Jackie's Sunday school picnic. We were busy taking them to the bathroom, stopping fights and playing games. I had to watch a kid named Terry. I bent his arm and pushed him along the way. He seemed subdued, so during our trip through the cow barn, I let go of him. Immediately he jumped at a cow and scared it shitless. I guess I shouldn't have let go of him. One little boy informed us that his father's brother, Eno, owned half the farm. The little girls were sweet, the boys terrible. Terry finally suffered a casualty. He slipped the milk house while swilling down two chocolates and cut his hand. Then I had to drive them all home. George Chicken died today at high noon. Well, that was the story of one of your Sunday school picnics that didn't end in tragedy, like the time the truck tipped over. Well, a couple nights later, I took Mother to the Pro Arte String Quartet at the chapel. The first fiddler's plays left-handed. It doesn't slow him up a bit. April 23, 49, Mom and Dad left for Colorado this morning at 5:30 with the Ruckmans. That night, Spike Jones put on a show at the college. This was when I was a freshman and you were a senior, I guess, Jackie. Oh, you were a junior and I was a freshman. The next week in April was Grandpa's heart attack and subsequent death, in that you have mimeograph or Xerox, Jackie. On Saturday, May 7th, I went on a Maurer Fellowship field trip to Dubuque, Iowa, to the Trappist Monastery. And the Trappist monks take a vow of silence. And I went off by myself and wandered around the farmyard watching these guys work. Tractor was very silent, except for the farm animals and the machinery, and a tractor rolled over one monk's foot and he let out a yell, and I imagine it broke his vows, but he says, God damn it. I mentioned Aunt Esther, May 8th, Dad, Mom, Grandma, and we went to dinner at Chopier at Esther's. Pierre was a junior senior and he flew his own plane, and on May 14th he took me up in this little Piper Taylor Cub. We flew over the farm and I took movies somewhere under the table in the front room in Wisconsin. There's those movies they took the farm in 1949. May 19th, Jackie's radio play was broadcast over WBNB radio tonight. Quote, the eternal wavelength, unquote. Remember that one, Jackie? Well, for old time's sake, for me, I played a dance job at Grinnell for Roger Mason, and he lost $20 because Docker's band, non-union band, was charging 30 cents at the armory. That was a hell of a note. May 28, 1949, the whole family had worms, ascaris, and I spent the day on the can because we all got dewormed. Summer of 1949, I worked at Phantom Lake YMCA camp. John Bort was there. My transportation was my Model T, and I'd drive back and forth to Beloit on my day off, 84-mile round trip. I'd have trouble with spark plugs exploding, and one did in front of the Methodist Church on a Sunday morning, and Phil Jones recognized my car sound and came running out to see me. In August of 49 is when Irv and Steve and I shingled the roof of the barn behind Chez Nous and pulled the frying of eggs up on top of it. Just a little interruption here. This is 25th of March, 1979. And I was reading about the Ten Commandments for husbands, and the last one says, honor the Lord thy God all the days of thy life, and thy children will rise up and call thee blessed. So I looked over to Trevor, age 14, said, Trevor, you haven't called me blessed. How come? He didn't know what I was talking about, and he looked up and said, well, I'll call you Leroy. I don't know why. September 9, 49, I helped with the contour plowing all day. Learned a little about surveying from the government man. I think that was when we first started plowing the hill farm. The next day were the field trials. Went on a milk route and saw some goats with 13 kids. The only farm thing I can find on October 22nd is that Don Jenkins, Simmons, Dave Mott, Ridge Whitson, and Mr. Bud Whiteford and I went pheasant hunting at the dairy farm, and that I got in after a dance job at 1 o'clock and fed the coon. I imagine that was Sig the Jig. So the name of the other coon, we had three coons, Sig the Jig and Bundle, and then the other one was George Scrooge Raccoon Brown. I think he was the one I brought from Phantom Lake. Now here's a word for word on Sunday, October 23, 49. Fed the coon and got hunting stuff together. Fine roast beef dinner. The Turtle Y Club dedicated a lectern of walnut to Grandpa's memory in a ceremony at the cabin in the Y Woods this afternoon. Lou Westfall made the dedication address and Arlie Crusell the sermon. Walsh's were there too. After that, I went to the chapel and Chad Walsh gave a fine address titled 2 plus 2 equals 5. Gave old Mr. Dean a quart of cider, drove a truck load of Wesley fellowshippers to the cabin, and the new advisor bitched about how I drove. Had hot dogs, etc., and a bum meeting. Guess I was leaving my high school days behind me as I got more involved in college. And the next day, Dad and I and Conway and Ruckman and the rest of us went to South Dakota. November 23, Louie's dance band scabbed a job in LaGrange because we didn't have union cards for Cook County or Chicago. But Jerry told me a variation on an old joke. He told me about the constipated mathematician. His version, the mathematician worked it all out with a slide rule. I really can't remember me doing any milking on the farm, Jackie, but December 15th, 1949, I was late to bacteriology because, as I say, I had to trot out a cow and milk it to get raw milk for an experiment. So at least once I must have. Well, this is December 18th. Family packed rapidly, climbed into the car, and Mom, Dad, Jackie, and Bob Jackson and I headed for Florida. Stopped in Chicago and gave the gifts to Uncle Pat's and then on. Got as far as Shelby, Indiana, and I'm shacking up with Bob Jackson in the AAA Cork. The next day, we got to Mammoth Cave. And I write, as Bob observed all the wet and moist rocks, he asked the guide, "What made it so wet down here?" "Water," said the guide. The next day, the 20th, Asheville tonight. We drove through the Great Smoky Mountains today and Mom was scared. I got movies. Signs on the way said not to feed the bears. Contour, North Carolina smelled terrible, like Ogie Johnson's outhouse. Gad. At one gas station we stopped at, the attendant couldn't write out the form for the credit card and Dad had to do it for him. Next day, 21st, Brunswick, Georgia today. Fairly dull ride through Georgia. Crackers and graham crackers. It must be tough to live in a town full of poor folks, especially if you are a poor folk. Bob drove a lot and scared me a couple times. Red clay, chickens, pigs, pickaninnies, and so forth. Stopped at the southeastern bull stud farm this morning, and then off we went. This was the time we saw all the three or four ways that they have of getting the bull excited. Weren't demonstrated, but were explained. I think the next day we were at Brunswick, Georgia. Got up at 5:30 to see the shrimpers go out. Had fine sausage at the Courtview Tea Room, and it had red peppers in it. Traveled through Florida and stopped at Silver Springs. Took movies of it and saw the sights again. Alligators, too. Then we drove on and on. Got to Winter Haven and visited the Charleses. That's who we had stayed with two or three times before. Couldn't put us up, though, so we stayed at one of their friends' house. And that was the last of 1949. My diaries are very sketchy from then on. I don't think I have any more. I found a few diaries that were just kept a little bit at a time. And on April 9, 1950, stories I was considering writing. The first one, two mice chewing away on corn cobs to get into a building of seed grain. At the same time, the father showing his son how to make cyanide and placing it. I went on and wrote that story, Jackie. I'll try and find it. It was written in college, but it was nowhere near as good as the Detassler. But it described the building from a mouse's point of view. And then the second idea was Saturn, how I felt about the night in Arizona when I saw it. I was up in the Santa Catalina Mountains with Dick Donaldson and some SAS boys. I imagine, this was part of your book. You felt the same thing at Pleasant Lake when you saw Saturn for the first time at the Boy Scout camp. Then the night Ron, Phil, and I rang the gong at the Girl Scout camp, which is on a previous tape. On Tuesday, May 16th, 1950, this is the specific, the Sunday school party where I almost killed myself today. Wasn't even scared. A 47 Pontiac hit the back end of the International Metro I was driving with Jackie and seven Sunday school kids. Spun me around and tipped over and slid 10 feet. Kids screaming and dust flying. I calmly felt the truck going over and I hung onto the steering wheel. It hit and slid. Jackie fell on me. First thing I thought of was Jackie, then the kids. Cops came. Fire truck came and washed gas away. Kids ran around. Other driver was on an errand for a man whose boy was being treated for a scald burn at the hospital. Dad and Irv came. Bud Wright turned the truck back up. Jack Kelly from high school saw part of the wreck. Doc Thayer wasn't home. I think I've got a cracked rib. I didn't even know I'd been hurt, Jackie. Good day, however. Jackie's picnic was nice and got wood and built a fire. Strange. Headline is June 11. Commencement. Jackie graduated summa cum laude. Jammed into my diary on that day as a piece of yellow paper, pretty well falling apart, with these poems in your handwriting, Jackie. The snowy owl flies from starved Arctic skies and bumbles into man's domain and dies. He loved the land and drew from it a part, and sharing it gave me a seeing heart. The kids are leaping high, their white legs flinging. The goat sedately walks, her udder swinging. Autumn afternoon, a pheasant goes burp burp behind. The rest is torn away. Jackie, Barbara says you're a stable head and I should read this one because I felt so sweet toward you those very much, that commencement and so proud of you and so forth. And on the 17th he got married. And I've described the ceremony and the big reception, but then ended up, what happened is you folks got all the way, made your getaway, and nobody followed you, and then came this plaintive call from the Silo Motel in Evansville, I guess it was. You'd forgotten your suitcase. So Daddy had me jump in the car, and I roared up to Evansville, and I got there, and the guy at the desk was very suspicious of me. And until I finally told him, look, I'm her brother and they forgot the luggage. He thought I was the head man trying to find you people to run a shivery. And I'm remembering now that this was very rural Wisconsin and it went on all the time. But in your case, you didn't have a shivery. You were just a little embarrassed about having your brother come from Beloit to bring you your forgotten luggage. Oh my, this has nothing to do with the farm, but can you imagine a night at the Blue Note with my cousin Jerry, and we heard Louis Armstrong, Cozy Cole, Jack Teagarden, Barney Bagard, and Father Hines. Wow. The next day, I was in Chicago with Jerry, and we went to Hudson Ross Music Store, and later we went to West Madison Street and looked at the winos. That semester I moved into the Sig House, Jackie, and one of my first comments was that, but I'm pretty well fixed up here. Two fine roommates, Frank Gross and Ken Worley. Wonderful life. Tonight, Ken swiped a pie and split it with us. Very kind of him. My grades dropped badly that semester. I didn't write much in my diary. I began to think maybe it wasn't just living at the Sig House, but having a roommate like Worley that contributed to my grades dropping. I'm dropping things all over here. Jackie, another little anecdote. I was in medical school and in Chicago at the Chicago Medical Center. My colleague Dave Downs reported he was walking along Maxwell Street and a little Negro, couldn't have been over 7, little Negro boy said loudly with awe and wonder in his voice, "They've got the motherfucking Christmas decorations up already." Well, Jackie, I'm finding another diary, 1957. Now on Saturday, I came home from medical school and drove around Northwest Beloit with Dad. Went on a fine run to Chopier and to Howard Milner's and heard a talking crow who told me to fuck myself and stick it up my ass. Foul. I voted against daylight saving time and against tying up dogs all year. Eat supper with Dad at the Elks. That's the best meal I had in months. The next day I ate at the dairy. This is when Ralph Anderson and Mrs. Gerke were running it, and their parakeet shat upon my head. Dad and I called on Burr South an old employee of Grandpa's, 1914 to 1918, who went to Whalen Academy. Everything fine except his aged wife attacked doctors. I got tired of that. Hated to leave Dad, but Dunbar and Ortiz, Child, and I drove to Elkhorn to see Phil Jones and Bev's new baby. Cute little wrinkled bastard. Phil's proud as a peacock. I went to the undergraduate Sigma Chi house on April 1st, and this was so many years out of college, I felt as out of place as an illegitimate kid at a family reunion. On April 28, 1957, I was up at 8 with Dad and got a canoe, and we went for a river trip on Turtle Creek, seeing birds, one dead grackle in the river. Grackles, male and female cardinals, red-winged blackbirds, vireos, wrens, crowns, crows, blue jays, kingfishers, and bank swallows. Very pleasant. Sunday, May 12, 1957, wonderful morning, breakfast with Dad, Mom, Jackie, and then to Walsh's to see Demi Lee and Megan. Demi sang My ABCs and Finnegan Begin Again. Then we went for a tour of the estate. A superhighway is coming through our farm. Shit. And we talked with farmers about this unwanted road. To the woods, quiet, wet, bleak, gray day. In the green young spring with wet leaves, wet wood, and wet violets and other wild flowers. Still, birds and small animals, morning about perfect. The next day I noticed that there's one good thing about polio because it keeps the kids off the streets. Why can't I see the movie, Mommy? They aren't showing it in Braille, dear. Jackie, if you're there, still there when this tape comes on, you won't understand this, but I have in my diary, again, and 57, I'm up north with Mom and Dad, and we found some Fitgers in the backwoods. Again, Dad sang out, peace and joy come to you, and to you your Fitgers too, etc. And Dad also said, noisy as a coon on a garbage can. The night before I left for medical school, for my internship, I had quite an afternoon in Beloit saying goodbye to all my friends and Goebel's dad. And then after supper, Dad told me to climb in the car and he was going to go down and we were going to meet with his employees. And we went to the dairy and he drove right out in the field and his employees were all the cows. I had misunderstood. I thought they were going to have a little going-away party for me. And Dad's humor. He said one thing about being in farming. When I went on vacation as a doctor, the money would quit coming in. But when he went on vacation, the cows kept working for him. I was called in consultation over one cow with bloat. She survived after eating grain and belching. Now, I thought you told me cows don't... No, cows belch. They can't fart. And horses can't belch, but they can talk. Phew. My last day home, I went to Rotary Club with Dad and sat with Dr. Robbie Revolson and Jack Rusberg. Finished packing and a nap. Took black ladies home and got my car at Budweiser's. Stopped for a bratwurst and wine at Pat's Lawn Party for Jeannie Redlick, and then home for a good ham salad and cheese potato supper. Went out in field with Dad and watched the crew work late, baling in the field west of our house. Quiet with only the baler making noise. Then flash pictures, and then with reluctant, aching and apprehensive heart, I kissed Mom, shook hands with Dad, kissed Dad, took off for Salt Lake City for a year. Stopped at Bennington's and then picked up Roger and had strawberries and cream and said goodbye to his folks as long as I said goodbye to mine. Dad brought the lunch I'd forgotten and we got going at 10:45 p.m. Jackie Joe might like this one. Sunday, February 17th, 1957. I was in Madison. Ate at Pison's and then to Joe's to show her my new sport coat. Nice, sweet sister. She's been fine to me during my Madison stay of 5 years. Jerry came running down to get his toy dog. Danny gets a sucker whenever he'll do his BMs on the toilet, etc. We took Carl an ice cream and Coke at WIBA. Played on my Shorty Peterstein record. Saturday, March 2, 1957, Jackie, I got home from Madison. I hadn't been home for several weeks. And saw Graham, who was 86, and Hazel. Oil greased my car at the dairy and continued my feud with her Fonda. I greeted her as lowlife and Fonda. And her Fonda said with a great deal of affection, called me a horse turd.
Hi, Dana. That's a blessing. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and that's all that is of my name.
I think this is going to be the dinner, but I'll put it on the other side of the tape.
During my Madison stay of 5 years. Jerry came running down to get his toy dog. Danny gets a sucker whenever he'll do his BMs on the toilet, etc.
Some of the chatter of our family until Mommy starts talking. I'm in receipt of your letter of August 1, 1980, sent from Vermont, with some of your wonderful stories and some of mine that you've added. One I wanted to add on Howard Milner's stories, and I don't have my diary, so I don't remember it exactly specifically, but Thad and his friend Roger Mason were playing in the dance band. I must have been 21. I was legal, Roger wasn't. But we had played with Louis Delvitt at the Black Hawk Tavern, a long job from 9 until 1 a.m. Being tired and weary, we retired to a illegal opened tavern called Mork's. As you recall, this was the foulest place in town, but at least we could get a glass of beer quietly in the back room, which we were doing. And Raj and I little knew what was going on in the basement. Suddenly the back door flew open and there stood Howard Milner, gun drawn, a platoon of cops behind him. And he saw Roger and me with our mouths falling open and our miserable little glasses of beer. And he said, "Craig, get the hell out of here." He and the guy next to him escorted us out. And then they proceeded to make the raid on Mork's. It was in the paper the next day. Mork's raided illegal gambling, and they were having a cockfight in the basement. I always had a warm spot in my heart for Howard Milner, but after he got Raj and me out of there, that was a very appreciative time. And I think I have this on a tape somewhere, but you might work it in that I, for Joe and Carl, I would buy colored margarine in Illinois at Jules, can't think of his last name's dairy. His dad had a little dairy, and Jules was his first name. Well, I'd buy colored margarine there and run it up to Madison until Dad found out what I was doing. He said, "How would you like the headlines? Local dairyman's son smuggling colored margarine into Wisconsin." Let's see if was there anything else. Oh, and if I don't have this down somewhere, the day I start, I just read about how this Baker milk salesman came in and wanted me to use Baker's milk, and I was W.J. Dogan, the baby's milkman, or R.A. Dogan at that time. But the day I started practice, my sister Patty sent me, that would be Owl Eyes, sent me a telegram, "Knock 'em dead, Thad." Anyway, here we go on with the tape. Here we go, and here is Grandpa Hope.
57, Jackie, I got home from Madison. I hadn't been home for several weeks. And
just repeating, it'll get on the
side. Saw Graham, who was 86, and Hazel. Oil greased my car at the dairy and continued my feud with her Fonda. I greeted her as lowlife, and Fonda, and her Fonda said with a great deal of affection, called me a horse turd.
Hi, Dana. That's a question.
Bless the Lord, O my soul, and as all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all your benefits.
I don't know about that. Yes, I can come.
And I told Bart. And Cindy, are you working Saturday?
Till 6. Does anyone want to come?
This is a discussing conversation about my clothes in 1978.
Put your son down to get a nice suit.
I'm looking nice. Look how nice I look.
Uh-huh. Looks all bad.
What's the matter with the way I look?
Craig went to work.
How does they ask the nurses?
Craig was in his little room resting, and he heard a couple of nurses come in. And one said, have you seen Dr. Jogan's cans? They have dog ears all over them. And the other one said, well, you should see my dog. He's wearing the same plaid pants last week. And what did the other one say about her? There were three of the men discussing how their dog is dressed. Craig said his ears perked up when he heard him mention. But he said he was in good company.
They're lowlives. Well, now, Jackie, I'm still transcribing a tape from 1978, but this is the story of Mr. Pripps, Mommy defending.
Just
a moment.
Microwave class. Her mom learned how to cook stuff. Sydney, that's my girlfriend from school. His car slid on the ice and tipped over and killed it.
Slid back and crushed him just like an accordion.
I'm just telling you the truth now about it, but I want Barbara to know about it. And they didn't let Mrs. Pripps know until several hours later they found it. And of course she felt terribly, and all of her friends did. The president of the Milwaukee district at the time, Mr. Pripps was a wonderful man. Now, why on earth our kids got into the president of this? Now, I'm going to the floor with the horse running and the car. He was going to come down and meet us at the Miami airport on the night before Christmas. There were some of the children that had seen everything that we're seeing in Florida, and a few of them that were younger hadn't. So we decided that we'd take it easily and we'd go and see everything and give them time to enjoy it. And we'd swim and fish and do things too. But we were to get down to meet his daddy. Well, before we went, Daddy got worried about sending me off with four children without him. So he told us about a big...
Semi.
A big semi.
Going up the hill, it was raining.
Went up the hill, and it didn't make it.
Started sliding.
And it started sliding and slid all the way down, and by the time and it hit something else, and they both collapsed like an accordion.
Mr. Pripps.
Now, why they dragged Mr. Pripps into it?
I thought that's what happened to Mr. Pripps.
He was hit
by a semi.
It was a rainy night, and he was going up the hill, and the car, the
truck slid back and got Mr. Cripp.
No, your mom said
just like an accordion.
It had nothing to do with that, and it is that it happened.
And just today on the way from the airport, if the body had been going up the hill and it had been raining and a truck had been sliding back, would have been just, it would have ended up just like Cripp's.
And the kids just put Mr. Cripp's to it.
To tell me and to tell you children.
Scared us all the way to Florida. We didn't want to end up like Mr. Cripp's.
We didn't follow a truck that closely.
Now he's got a glass named after him.
But ever since then, they've put Mr. Cripp's into it. And Mrs. Cripp's is one of my best friends, and she's still living. And
does she know that, Larry?
No, I it just makes me ill every time I hear you talking about Cripp's and the... Accordion, because he died in a car accident that just tipped over on him. We won't mention it again unless it rains. Well, anyway, Craig, that's the truth of it. Anyway.
Well, I'm awfully glad that that's straightened out now. I know you're never keen on us playing accordions after that.
Boy, you're full of them tonight, huh, Dad?
I'm going to take my Festol in.
Oh, Dad.
Oh, my.
Mrs. Cripps is a lot of money, and she's traveled ever since. Here, there, Europe.
Oh.
I see her every little while.
Come on, Jack, you think her book is going to be published? Going to be years or soon. Such a remarkably good book.
She did one book, you know, before she did that.
Yeah, I read that one. That's a sad one.
She's got in Boston, and she's gone over to see Gilbert and Philbert right now.
She telephoned this from there. From Gilbert's house?
Mm-hmm.
Jackie, I just repeated this, and this is
again.
About midnight on May 1, 1980, 2 days before your birthday.
Oh,
I was convulsed with laughter on many of the things that have. What you're missing now is Leon Redbone singing some choice songs that I like. But anyway, I was listening to this about a year or 2 years ago, and we've been through so much together. How much I love you, and I hope you can get some chapters out of my memories and our memories, and even at this late date in 19, this is now May 1, 1980. So, continue right along, same date. I'll tell you something that happened last night, Jackie. Just realized that we had our first tremendous thunder lightning storm. Portland, Oregon has seldom a thunder lightning storm because it's almost always raining. But we are living about 45 to 60 miles south. Last night, the thunder came closer and closer, and we counted the seconds. First of all, 25 seconds, the lightning, and then 25 seconds later, the thunder. And Trevor and I brought up little chairs from outside and sat on our colonial patio in front of our fantastic 4 acres. And it came closer and closer, and the moon was out. We could see the thunderheads and lightning going from cloud to cloud and from ground to cloud and from cloud to ground. And got closer and closer, and you know, all this took about an hour, and finally I gave up and came inside, and I was sitting in our sitting room bedroom with Biscuit, the Border Collie half Savoyed, sitting at my side, and suddenly, wham, the thunder and lightning hit the same time. And suddenly I had this huge dog in my lap, apologetic, grinning and smiling and licking my face, embarrassed to be there, but scared shitless because she was afraid and so was I. And I hung onto this dog and she slobbered me, and then I put her down disdainfully
And she looked at me adoringly, and Bucky came running in to wonder what was going on. It was a very tense but joyous moment.
There we go.
Current things. This is now 1980. And it's 10 after 12 on the 30th of April, almost May and almost your birthday. Talked to Mommy and Dad two nights ago, and Mommy told me all about her son who had a beautiful new house. She also told me about the new fantastic drug that her son had prescribed for her. And of course, Dr. Fass prescribed the drug, and of course, the beautiful new house is my house, and Daddy is handling this very well, and so is Mommy. I hope that we both have as much strength at her age and Daddy's age as they demonstrate to us. It still gives one pause. You have degenerative arthritis or osteoarthritis of the spine, and you asked me earlier, aren't you a little young for that? No, not at all, because at about age 21 we all start getting it, because that's when we begin to quit growing and start to degenerate. And you don't recall, but I do, is my back began giving me DJD, or degenerative joint disease, when I was all of 38, 39, and
well, I think we can let that
has continued to. Swimming continues to be the best exercise all the way. I won't go into this on tape, but thought you'd like to know that. And one other thing, if you can get a brew called Schludwiller, S-C-H-L-U-D-W-I-L-L-E-R, of the California Eastern Brewing Company. It's a beer lifestyle and a t-shirt. And that certainly helps the sore back. If you do that, if you take one glass of that before every exercise program, it would certainly help, and I suggest you extend that to your YWCA and your YMCA, and probably to Marion, your librarian, who suggests erroneously a chiropractor. Don't go to a chiropractor with spurs on your back. He could probably kill you.
This next little bit, Jackie, had to do with an old man named Harry Truman, who wouldn't, not the president, but the fellow who wouldn't leave the Mount St. Helens area. And so there have been several new songs come out about him. This is probably my favorite. Just part of it. Well, come along, Harry Truman. That was quite a blast. I was on call the third time the mountain went off. Had to rush up the third floor to be able to see it. I don't know if it's going to come on. I better turn you off here. There it goes, pretty quick. Come on, I'm wasting tape here.
Thank you. same blaster. I've changed it 5 times in my life, and it's going to sit there and it rots down. My God, I'd like to see the man that's going to take that sign off that.
Now I'll leave you here in that very special land.
Well, Jack, you heard Biscuit just wandered in. Now we're back to Monday, August 4th. Come on, sing, Biscuit! Good, Biscuit. Jackie, this is Thursday, August 7th, 1980. I'm trying to remember some things without the diary, and one came across since I got your letter about, remember, about medical school and so forth. One time I came home from medical school and there was a great big furor because, and I may have covered this, but at any rate, it's something you might be able to write a chapter on. It's the time that I believe Irv Fonda was helping in Ruby Obeck's field, and this is when they still had corn shocks, or we still had corn shocks, or she did. But at any rate, you could put the corn shocks in there and wait many weeks in spite of the rain, because the rain came off the corn shocks. Grandpa will probably say it different, but it seems to me that's why they had the teepee effect, and we used to make little houses in them, and I can remember lined houses with the corn. That's another story. But anyway, they found a dead man in one of them, frozen stiff, and Irv was sick. Oh, we have gone through this story, and how they picked on the poor guy working for Ruby. But Irv still was awfully sick on that. I think we recorded that one before. But I remember that I was very interested, not pathologically so, but the fact that I was in pathology at the time, that I was hoping this particular one would come to University of Wisconsin for diagnosis, and it didn't. And that's my story of that one, just a follow-up. Well, how do I turn this off here? You asked me about how I decided to go to medical school. Right off the bat, I can't find any diaries through college except intermittently, like I've given you. This doesn't make much of a story, but a lot of the thought was, and then we go from there, that for Grandpa never discouraged me from going with him. He never encouraged me either. I was in college at Beloit, which was loaded with liberal arts, and I had enough credits for almost 4 majors. And at the time, Beloit would only, you had to choose one. I chose biology because I thought I was going to go on into ministry. And thereby hangs a tale. Now, why was that? I don't know. But I chose if I was going to be a minister, wouldn't it great to have a Bachelor of Science as a minister? Now I look back and wish I have a Bachelor of Arts when I went into medicine. Well, that's the way it goes. Why I went on into biology was, of course, Bennington and Welty. And I can remember the precise moment that I decided to take a crack at medical school, and that's what it was, Jackie, take a crack at medical school. There's a lot of things leading up to it, which I'll try and cover later, But I remember working late many, many nights in the lab in comparative anatomy. And it was so marvelous because Bennington would be there at night. He didn't have to be there. But the course was so tough that after our labs, after everything else under the sun, most of us would just go up there and work extra to do our... We liked it. And we'd dissect this and that and the other just to go on to the cats. Now, I'll remember one fellow that, boy, he was delighted because he found a cat with kittens and these rubberized arteries and veins made it like a slingshot. And he dropped his little ovarian pouch full of kitties and they bounced like a yo-yo. That's kind of rough, and I don't think you want that in your story, but I'll never forget it. And it wasn't a malignant thing. It was just, it happened, and we all looked at it, and oh my goodness, isn't that interesting? But specifically, the one time that I thought I want to try for medicine was when I was dissecting out the semicircular canals of a dogfish. And I was having trouble with it. Bennington came over and helped me whack down to it, and this is written up in Highways to Faith, edited by David Wesley Soper, and I don't describe it quite as precise as this, but what I was doing was dissecting beautifully, and Benny came over and cut through an awful lot of well, like politics, a lot of bullshit, got me right down to it, and then said, now go, now dissect. And he saved me about 4 or 5 hours of dissection because we all were timid. He got me right down to the semicircular canals, and then I was able to dissect this fantastic part of the hearing system, which is very similar to us, dogfish, coon, white man. I didn't mean that. But anyway, at that point, I can remember this precisely. I think I was a senior my last year, didn't know what I was doing, didn't know what I was going to do, and there it was. And how fantastic the human dogfish was, how fantastic the human might be. And although I'm rambling now because I'm not reading from a diary, this was the one spot where I thought, gee, I would like to learn an awful lot more about it. Why not medicine? I went in through an anatomical idea. Another thing that I have been most quiet about, I talked to Dr. Nylands one time indirectly. I talked to him straight on, but indirectly. I wanted to know where the schools were, and they had no veterinarian school in Wisconsin, and I'd already taken Daddy's nickel to go to Beloit College, which is a private school and wasn't cheap, and the closest vet school was Ames, Iowa, and that was an out-of-state school, and that was very expensive. So, and this is a truism, I applied to 3 or 4 medical schools, and I think you'd like more specifics on how I got in, but after I'd taken my 5th year and had fulfilled my requirements, I applied to Western Reserve St. Louis, which is a Catholic school, and that I thought a great deal of because of some friends, and University of Wisconsin, which I really wanted and didn't know if I'd get in. And I got accepted to all 3 and got rejected from Columbia, where Jerry got in. And the same week, I got accepted to Garrett, which was Northwestern's seminary for Methodist preachers. And so that 1 week, and don't put this in your book, but, well, you can if you want, but I spent a great deal of time on while on the knees or whatever. Anyway, a lot of time thinking, kicking up my heels in the field. Which way am I going to jump? And I chose University of Wisconsin Medical School. And at that time, can you imagine, to be a medical student cost $300 a semester for tuition as a medical student, and we bitched because you could be $150 just to be an undergraduate, and now it's something like to be a state student is $1,500 to $2,000 a semester. Times were different. I didn't answer your question. It's just a little addition specific, and I'll try and come up with a hilarious story or something a little later. But I wanted to get this on tape while I was thinking about it, Jackie. And good night, and love you to pieces. Jackie?
Well, the rest of the tape is inconsequential. It was a repeat of the Howard Miller story. And the date now is the 15th of August, and we're eagerly awaiting Grandma and Grandpa, who are coming in Wednesday, which is the 20th. I have just a weekend, and then one short day and one all 24-hour day. And then we go pick them up, and we'll have a good time. And we're so looking forward to them. And Jackie, I just got your letter tonight about Grandpa's death. Made a few corrections, was overwhelmed, and was rather disarmed for the rest of the evening. All I can say is just superb, magnificent. You are the finest writer I've ever known. Can't say much more about it. I'm still tremendously touched. David is touched. Barbara's upstairs reading it now, and I expect her down any time. It is certainly superb.
Burst open in there, and
the only additions I made was that there were oxygen tubes from the nose instead of just tubes in the nose, and that he didn't make us cheerful, that we were guardedly cheerful or guardedly carefully cheerful or something like that, because I don't remember being cheerful during the whole time. I do remember